hearing.
Have you read the summary?
Yes, I have.
Have you read it already? Have you read all of it?
If it was in the file that I got, I have. Yep. Yep.
Well, I think what we'll do is we'll leave the TIS aspect until later and deal with the general first, and then we can check. It may well take us the rest of the afternoon dealing with the general, so.
Yes.
Awesome. Do you have any questions?
First of all, I want to ask you about the MPS UD, or the MPS for urban development capacity. And the housing and business capacity assessment studies that have been done and approved now earlier this year. And I understand from Ms. Scott that Council's position is that there is sufficient zoned feasible capacity, and that this has taken into account, well, I suppose I want you to explain to me the extent to which this has taken into account the existing use of houses for RBA, a future use of houses for RBA, and what percentage growth there might be in this district, and the ongoing use and growth of the percentage of holiday homes per se.
Could you just move the microphone closer, please?
Is that better?
Slightly, yes.
Slightly? I'm a mother, I'm sorry. what it didn't consider is the growth.
Did it assume a continued growth at the same rate that they've been growing, or no growth at all?
It's my understanding that it didn't.
And do you know why? Is that an oversight? Or?
No, I don't know.
So it's just assumed that the existing number of short-term rentals will continue, but any new houses on the market won't be additional numbers of RBA. What might come along.
That's right. So there was uncertainty regarding looking at today.
So would that be clear if we read those studies? The business study, presumably, it looked at, I don't know, whether the housing or the visitor accommodation, or the business strategy, one or the other, looked at capacity for tourist accommodation, visitor accommodation generally. Do you? So, my next question was that the MPS is also about business capacity. It's not just about housing capacity, and it's about choice of places to locate businesses and to provide for social and economic well-being through business capacity and choice. Do you know how the council has considered the impact of restricting RVA on visitor accommodation and on visitor accommodation capacity, and therefore on the well-being of visitors, homeowners, and the general capacity to provide for tourist accommodation in the district generally?
Do you mean business capacity assessment?
Yes.
No, I don't know.
You don't know? No, so you don't know whether they've looked at no more growth in RBA and considered whether that might affect business capacity?
Because it wasn't part of the
The, you also look at the strategic directions, and particularly for, I mean, you say that visitor accommodation's got to be considered in light of both the provisions for the zones themselves, say the lower density and medium density zones, but also as well as the strategic direction. But I mean, we can, I mean, and these provisions do change the provisions within the zones. They start introducing provisions within the zones themselves that pretty much mirror whatever rules are going to be provided for. So to look at a higher level of direction, we're looking at the strategic direction. So just, can you summarise for me what you consider the strategic direction is for visitor accommodation in the residential zones? In my ignorance, I'm not having been involved with that part of the plan, but yeah. In your evidence, you list all the relevant strategic directions, but you don't summarise what they say of relevance. What are the key points from them? Are there any? I mean, because when you read them, they're quite bland in terms of the level of specificity that we're looking at here. Is there any direction? I know there's something, I think, for rural zones. People keep quoting what there is for rural zones, but I'm thinking about the residential zones. Yes. For visitor industry just says make provision for the visitor industry in the urban areas at locations that are consistent with the objectives and policies for the relevant zone. So then we end up writing the objectives and policies, well, the policies anyway, for the relevant zone to match whatever rules we are suggested. I know that you've said that there, and you continue to say that there are different effects or adverse effects from residential visitor accommodation from residential activity.
Yes.
And you'd say what those sorts of effects are. What research or what basis do you have? I mean, how have you determined that this is a problem, that it is an issue, that there are these effects and that they're different?
In what way are they difficult to monitor? Is it because you don't know that they're there? But from what I take from that is, if you're unable to tell that they're there, they can't be having much of an effect, because otherwise you would notice the effects.
You don't have any record of the cause of the problem.
No, that's right. Difficulties in that. I mean, the two reasons for the issue. One, the housing affordability, long-term rental affordability, and the other, residential amenity and social cohesion, etc. And we've been talking in the last witness about the difficulties of finding any cause and effect between housing, long-term rental affordability, and RBA, and I mean there are inferences that can be drawn, etc. Yes.
And so that's, I mean, it's not clear cut. And now we've got the residential amenity side of things, where again there's no evidence that it's an issue. I mean, there's evidence that it might be an issue, and there's evidence from you,
yes,
but there's no information or basis for that evidence.
Yes.
Why do you think it's a problem? I mean, what causes you as a planner in Queenstown Lakes to think that this is a problem if you've got no evidence of it? You hear that from the people themselves,
yes,
do they?
Yes, I do.
You consult.
Would it be fair, just to add to the flavour of the mix, would that be fair in the same way that since 2015, with the rise of Airbnb, you can say that it has had an impact on, in terms of the way the rents are rising, the way that the impact on affordability, you could actually say that roughly in that same period, there's been a greater impact in terms of complaints or issues that have been noticed, and people who are investing in houses not to live in but to, as rentals.
I can certainly say in terms of my conversation.
something that would be expedient. Fern Hill by the councillors that reside there, Frankton by the councillor that resides there. It's certainly a topic that's around the council.
Done any surveys of to actually get a, how can you put it, some sort of community response to these things, which isn't driven by the people who are complaining, but actual, you know, like a telephone survey where questions are designed to be neutral but elicit the actual information base.
Not to my knowledge, no.
Hmm. How much of that is, it's a hard way to put it, but actual effects as opposed to perceived effects on those people? There are certain people who perceive there to be a problem and say there's a problem, but when you investigate there isn't a problem.
The effects, I'm talking about the residential amenity, social cohesion type effects at the moment, your ability, even anecdotally and just from what people hear and say or submit on, and the ability to distinguish the effects on amenity and social cohesion from the Airbnb, residential RBA type activities versus a vacant holiday home, or a tenanted property in a rapidly turning over tenant market. Tenant market, I suppose, say like Queenstown. Yeah.
I think it's the frequency of the premises.
Residential cohesion. Mm-hmm. Holiday home that's empty for a lot of weeks of the year, 40 weeks of the year or something. It's not adding to social, but it's got a different effect on social cohesion than having a house that's got people there, different people there every week.
Yeah, I'd say it is a different effect, but I think.
Just now looking at rural zones, which Federated Farmers and a number of other submitters have raised. Again, you've I think they, one of us, maybe it's Federated Farmers, has asked for up to 8 guests. Maybe, I don't know if they've continued to push that through their evidence, but they certainly would want the ability to have more than one structure on the property to be able to be used at any one time.
Yes.
And then others have said that there's not really any need to manage effects to the same extent in rural zones. I mean, have you got anything you can tell us about why you consider that their effects are as significant or as important to manage in rural zones as they are in residential zones? They say it might apply to any residential zone. They're not all the same. So our response doesn't need to be one size fits all. In the straight rural zone,
yes.
Are the effects of having 5 people, for example, over 2 structures,
yes. Oh.
Any different than having 5 people in 1 structure? Because that's the difference at the moment.
What they're asking for is to have 5 people in the
land. Oh yes, but that's not the only answer of what I'm saying, is it?
You mean
a rural area, does it really matter if, say, the initial 5 people are split over more than 1 structure?
No, I don't think it does. But I don't think
5 in each.
5 in each.
Given the size of the structures, that a residential flat in the rural zone can be 150 square metres,
yes.
Is that an issue?
That's pretty big. Yes. For the panel's information. The definition of a residential flat.
And I think in rural lifestyle and in rural residential. I can't remember either, but yes, certainly large.
Yeah,
that was suggested by the council officers too.
Yeah, it's
big. And so that could. Well, yes, that comes back to Commissioner Dawson. Question, if you've got 2 houses that are 150 square metres,
mm-hmm.
which is effectively, once you've got, provided you get consent for the structures, because that's discretionary,
yes.
Does it matter if there's 5 people in each on a site which may be 30, 40, 80, 150 hectares? Would it make a difference if they were living there permanently?
As Because this is a homestay, in other words.
Lots
of people living there permanently.
Yeah. I mean, 10 people living in the two places all the time. Is it the changeover that makes the difference in the rural lifestyle or rural residential? Or just the numbers? I'm just talking about the buildings having people living in them.
Yes.
So it's potentially residential. Is that, it comes back to this question about what is the difference between having people there permanently and having people who might change every 2 or 3 days. Some of them changing and some of them not changing.
And this is in the context of all of the rural zones?
Yes.
No.
Well, in all of the rural zones,
in all of the rural
yes.
Zones. I certainly think that
in the broader rural zone, is that effect on social cohesion as important or as significant?
No, I accept that it's not.
At the start of this conversation, you said that you accept that there could be a less restrictive regime for homestays, for example, in the rural zones compared with the residential zones. But at the moment, is the only difference the activity status for not complying with the standards?
No, in addition, so what I've recommended is that the urban zones, so the
You've stayed with 5 in the rural
That's
zones.
That's correct. I haven't recommended
a change. Talking about that reduction from 5 to 3 for homestays, I really ascertain from your evidence what the main basis for that was. I mean, what are the significant effects? I think you said that that could be found at 5, but were preferable at 3.
Sure. It's my view that
beyond 3 would be not, would that be non-complying for homestay?
Yes.
Can't remember, in the residential zones?
Yes, that's right, exactly.
Yeah. That's on the basis of social cohesion effects. And then similarly, the whole question of 28 nights, 42 nights, 90 nights, 120 nights. I think we've got all of those before us.
We've got lots of options on the table.
Yeah, well, no nights, I suppose, or 365. I think at the other end,
mm-hmm.
For RBA.
Yes.
How did you come to 42? rather than coming at it from, well, what are the effects of 28 versus 42 versus 19?
Yes.
It's more what's practical whilst retaining the principal residential use of the property.
So
is it sort of moving? Are you aiming for new residential visitor accommodation to stop being houses where people don't live at all,
mm-hmm.
or don't live very often,
mm-hmm.
And are principally or more frequently RVA, to really be the RVA is just a secondary use of houses where people live permanently.
Correct.
And that's the council's aim.
That is my view.
A big proportion of houses that are holiday homes and
yes.
that are probably unoccupied for more than 42 nights a year, many
yes.
of them. Those people, those properties are limited to the same sort of level of non-residential occupancy as houses where people might live but go away for all their annual leave.
Yes,
yeah.
Because it's tried to do that. So differentiating, you're right.
I can certainly understand how it's difficult over a long time to distinguish between different types of users. What I was just asking you to confirm was that in coming to a position of the 42 days,
yes.
that's really based around what's acceptable in a permanently occupied house, and everyone else just has to fit in with that, because that's the sort of baseline.
That is the baseline
that's proposed. more strong direction for residential activities to be the primary activity in those low density and medium density zones. And I'm sure I asked my fellow commissioner, does that also flow from the residential zones themselves in relation to other non-residential activities? I mean, has there been a move from the ODP to the proposed plan to tighten up on other non-residential activities in residential zones?
Not to my knowledge, I have to admit, though.
Well, I mean, there's still a residential house, but things like motels, for example, other visitor accommodation.
That's
been tightened in residential areas from the ODP.
No, we are proposing to use the same method that's in the ODP, which is through the DRP. A resource consent requirement that you need to meet. That's a continuation, I think, of the.
Something like medical centres and all those sort of range of uses that often go into residential areas. Have they been targeted to keep them out of residential areas? Put them into the town centres?
I don't know, but yes. If I could.
Whether that's a general policy for residential areas for residential activities as opposed to a wider range of other activities.
I can certainly look at that.
Okay. Now, just asking about enforcement,
yes.
Which you've covered in your rebuttal,
yes.
Because it's been raised in evidence, say, by Ms. McLeod, for example, is the difficulty of enforcing, and you've said it's been difficult under the ODP, and particularly now we're going to have this combination of issues with existing use rights under the ODP as well as enforcement under the proposed plan. Have you had any more thoughts about that? You said you were going to reflect on it.
Yeah,
and the scope for this registration standard. I don't mean scope in that sense, I mean scope in terms of ability to do it under the Resource Management Act.
Ms. Fudd, how do you get onto the register in the first place? Do people come into the council and volunteer that information? Does Airbnb tell you? Does the council look at the newspapers and say, aha, here's somebody, or online or whatever? How do they get there in the first place?
There's a registration. So in the opportunity of visitor accommodation,
so what was that paragraph again, sorry?
Paragraph 6.9 of my section 42A report. It's a footnote below that, so it's footnote 25.
I'm seeing it now, yes.
Yeah, so that explains the operative.
I can understand how it's defined.
Yep.
I'm just wondering how you find out, I suppose might be a better way of putting it. Because if people, if I just say, I won't tell the buggers, how's it get there? Does your neighbour dob you in? And then you have to call into the council shamefacedly and say, well, I admit that I'm working with Airbnb. Because that's a bit I don't fully understand at the moment.
So people would, they would apply to register.
So it's really honesty box approach. There's no penalty for not having fessed up, I assume. You just accept you'd end up not being on the register.
You, well, typically, it's explained in the footnote 25. To need requiring, to coming under the definition of visitor accommodation. Mm. And so if it was
voluntarily come in and register, that's one thing. If you don't and you're caught out, you might be dobbed in by your neighbour or whatever, then you're told, sorry, we won't just stick you on the register, you have to apply for resource consent.
Correct. If there's a resource consent requirement for VA and that's in the zone.
Sorry, I just wanted to be clear about that.
Just to come back to your further thoughts, is it your recommendation to us that to deal with the enforcement problem,
yes,
that a standard requiring registration and say documentation is necessary?
However, it would only assist to a certain degree, in my view. And we also have the, obviously, the operations that are, have existing use rights. So I think, as a mechanism to assist with enforcement, that it is warranted.
What would you take into account? I mean, a control means that you would have to grant consent to someone who refused to register.
You could, as a condition of consent, require them to register.
No, well, that would really undermine the application. I don't know if you could do that.
Yes, that
would
be
actually
nullify
their application.
Right. Okay,
maybe. So I don't think you could do that. No, I mean, I think you could make them all controlled and have them all.
You could. I mean,
but that's the alternative. You put in your rebuttal.
Yes. Yes, it could be controlled from the outset, so not have a permitted
application. Are you recommending that?
No.
The other, just on the other question that I know that will be put to us, it's my understanding under the ODP that when you register that your rating circumstances change. Presumably the same would happen if the standard was complied with that you're proposing.
I don't know. People within our rates team.
Because I know that we will be told, well, that is not a resource management reason.
In terms of rating, registration being...
for any listing can't be to do with rating.
No, and I haven't included that. I have included at the end of my section 42 I report. Writing of rates policy sits outside of the district plan.
Scott, I think. I mean, what have you thought about? What would the council consider on an application to not meet the standard for registration and documentation? I mean, is there any conceivable reason for granting that application? Or should it be prohibited?
No.
Just for that standard?
Yeah, I haven't considered prohibited.
I mean, at the moment you could be non-complying, you could potentially be discretionary, depending on what zone you're in.
Yep. I think non-complying would be a very onerous activity status.
On a policy basis,
yes,
for
that's
it,
right.
That linked thing that you would consider when someone said, no, I'm not going to register.
Yeah, I think the scale.
The other problem that you end up with, that the purpose of the registration is to know that they're there,
yes.
And if they make an application to not register,
yes.
You actually know anyway,
yeah.
So you've effectively registered by applying to not register,
yeah.
Which makes the whole standard a nullity.
They were certainly bringing themselves to our attention.
But that means is you can't avoid the standard. You can't not comply with it.
Most efficiently. I mean, and if there isn't a method, or even if this method doesn't work, is it going to be an ongoing difficulty, in your view, for the council to monitor and enforce the very activities that have these adverse effects that the council's trying to avoid?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the use of the monitoring of non-residential activities in residential.
Just earlier on, I was raised with Ms. Scott, the issue of distribution of residential visitor accommodation. Now, a number of the submitters, I think one is a Mr. Crisp, is going to come along and say, well, an alternative to that is to have the council's approach, but only in certain places, and have it basically a free-for-all elsewhere. And that made me think about the issue of covenants, because that could be quite significant. I understand in Jack's point, you can't have RBA under their covenants. Do you know if that is in fact correct?
I can't confirm it with you.
I understand that, but the reason I'm pursuing this is that if covenants are, particularly covenants restricting RVA,
mm-hmm.
that's going to have a significant, how shall I put it, locational impact on this issue, because essentially what these covenants are designed to do is, well, spade is to add to people's perceptions of the prestige of the area they live in, keeping the riffraff out of that perception. That's really what it is. Call a spade a spade. And if these provisions exist, as I understand they do in Jack's Point, they could well do in other areas as well, which would have the effect of it, if the council's provisions come into effect, of confining these provisions, I suppose, the application of these provisions only just to certain places where development's already well established and hasn't taken place through large subdivisions like Arrowtown, Fernhill, Queenstown Hill, those sort of places.
So then you get into the semantics of
I fully understand that. I was just trying to understand if it's not, it would be unlikely that they'd be uplifted if they're in because that there would be a perception, however false, that this would detract from the amenities of the neighbourhood. Certainly having experience of dealing with the good residents of Jack's Point previously,
okay.
I could see that being a sort of an issue, whether it applied to places like Bendemeer or those sort of places as well. Quail Rise, I don't know, but it is quite an important issue, and whether it can be found out as to whether there are covenants of that nature in place, because if there are, they could have a significant impact on the future location of RVA.
It's certainly something that I can look into.
Second issue is totally unrelated to that. It touched on what Ms. Dawson asked about before, existing use rights. Pains to point out a number of times in the report that for people who already operate and got existing use rights, these rules won't affect them.
Yes.
But again, isn't there going to be an enforceability issue here? Because people could hide behind the argument, oh, well, I've been doing this for ages, I've got existing use rights. It might be a legal question, I'm not sure. Does the onus fall on the council to prove that people don't have existing use rights, or does it work the other way around? Does the person asserting existing use rights have to prove to the council that they have them?
The latter is correct.
The latter is correct in law?
Yes.
Okay, well, thank you. And given the evidence we've heard before from Mr. Hayes and others, and I think the general acceptance that there's obviously gaps in our knowledge from that and there's large amounts of information we just don't know, would it be fair to say that the council is inviting us to conclude that on the balance of probabilities that RVA has had or is going to have an adverse effect on the availability of rental housing stock? Would that sum up what you're asking us to accept?
Yes.
The only other thing I was going to try and explore with you a little bit is that the panel could come to the conclusion that, yes, that is a problem. On the balance of probabilities, there is a likely adverse effect on the availability of the availability of rental housing, but it could also conclude that the methods the council is proposing is neither effective or efficient. So they're really two separate things, aren't they? So we can conclude, yes, there is a problem. We might conclude that the RMA and the district plan is not a appropriate means or efficient and effective means of dealing with that problem, because they're two separate questions, aren't they?
Yes, I would agree with that.
I was wondering if you could give me a definition of riffraff, please. I'm going to delve into the visitor accommodation subzones, and you drew a definition or a difference between in the medium. This is in Wanaka, the medium density residential zone shown on planning map 21.
Yes.
But there's no real difference in how it's treated outside of, in terms of being restricted to safe, it's anticipated, it's ID, but it's still comes down to the 42 nights total.
Yes, and it's the same for the Heidi.
I was just wondering, given that, that we're, you know, Wanaka Airport's a oil tanker as opposed to the acting, but just anticipating that the changes that are going to be happening, if we actually go far enough with looking at that medium density zone, how that can be and I was just wondering about your thinking about why in that area specifically it's the again, it comes down to the 40 nights outside of applying for a resource consent.
That's right, and this is what I've done approach that I'm recommending for the hiding. Queenstown context, the high density residential zone adjoins the town centre. Have the same more enabling framework.
Point out at this stage that I do want to operate a business in that zone, and I know 20 odd or 30 people in there. It's not a conflict of interest. It's
just how I don't recall seeing a map showing how far it is.
I haven't appended a map. My apologies for not appending a map.
I was using this one. One I was using, apologies, was on the back of that little handout on VA that
right,
was purchased in.
Just in terms of that, have you undertaken any assessment of whether that would have any effect on the development capability of Wanaka? Given it's a big chunk of the
it is a big chunk, yeah.
Of the medium density zone in Wanaka. I've got the appeal version here. I'll check.
Because that may impact on the
extent of it.
Yes. The only area appealed is at the end of Upton Street that Commissioner McLeod can't talk about.
No comment.
Which is the area west of McDougall, where the visitor accommodation there, and there's a VA subzone proposed for that, and there's an appeal on the zoning of it.
Thank you. Sorry to just keep going. There is, I think,
very conveniently doesn't tell us the appeal number on that one. But there is a there is an appeal on the transition zone, which I suspect is by the same appellant, and it's probably that appeal, which is number 64.
UTI drafting question about rule 8515 and 85X, which are the rules we're looking at the moment. Yes, in your rebuttal version.
So it was
8515 and 85X. I mean, I could have got this all wrong, but in 85X in your rebuttal, you've added in the medium density visitor accommodation subzone into X. Should that be in it part of the exclusion in 8515? I think it should. Yeah, because you've got one exclusion. You've got the one that you added in your evidence in chief, which is the MAP 21 area,
yes,
which is in both rules, but in blue you've added in this other,
yes,
area, and it should probably be excluded from 8515 as well. Okay.
Further questions, Commissioner McLeod?
Not really, yeah. I'd love to.
I have one or two, but it's 2 minutes to five, so that might be more sensible to adjourn until tomorrow. Start on those.
I'm happy to go longer.
We won't have any problem getting through unless you don't want to be here tomorrow. Is that what you're hinting at?
No, I can be here tomorrow. It is nice though to do it. So I can go home tonight. And, you know.
No. Well,
sorry.
I don't mind.
Other commissioners other than myself have other engagements.
No, let's go then.
So I would and it may take some time. So I mean, I'd sooner not start than spend another hour.
That's fine.
We'll adjourn till 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.